the Football Sack Podcast, powered by Summerland Credit Union. Banking on football. Go to bankingonfootball.com for details.
Hello, you're listening to the Football Sack Podcast on the Summer of Football, and it's not actually that hot today, thankfully. Pat Flaherty's with me, as he always is.
How you going, mate?
I'm good. And joining us on the line from Melbourne, it's my old podcast mate, Christian Leyland. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Jack.
That was good. There was only a 19-second delay in between me asking how you were and you responding.
How's the technology we're bringing to, bring to the fore here?
Yeah, this is the NASA podcast you're listening to. How's things down south, mate?
Mate, I can't complain too much. The weather is beautiful, the football's plentiful, and although the results aren't always pretty, it's always enjoyable. So I'm loving life.
Excellent. I'm very glad to hear that. Let's jump right into the deep end and discuss the A-League. This week, I think it's fair to say the biggest story of the week was Central Coast Mariners getting caught up in bushfire fever and had a fire sale when they didn't really have to. Once again, Central Coast Mariners are top of the league and are selling their best players. What are your thoughts, Christian?
Well, it's a strange one because obviously we saw last year they probably lost the grand final because of it. And you know, losing Griffiths and Simon were huge blows, and they were very much a worse-off team once those players left. And they seem to be doing the same again this year. They've recovered. They're suddenly top of the league again, as they were. It's getting towards that middle of the season, and they're selling them all again. Now, I can almost understand where they're coming from, because if you can show a talented young player that you're prepared to let them go when a great opportunity comes up, they're more likely to sign for you than, say, a team like Sydney FC, who in the past who have held on to players despite them wanting to leave. So you're going to attract talent because of that. But, of course, when you get into these good situations, you're also going to lose them at times which are not going to be ideal.
Yeah, it's a good point that Central Coast Mariners are open to letting players move on. And they actually brought out a thing this week, a sale, an ad that I saw on TV. I'm just quoting them here, saying, Arnie's gone crazy, everything must go. Rogic, Ryan, Abini, out the door. Buy Josh Rose and get a free John Hutchinson. Call in the next 20 minutes and they'll throw in Mile Sejovski as well. And if you're not completely satisfied, simply return the players within 28 days and you can keep Mile as their gift to you.
No rain checks.
That's right, and that's no rain checks, so you've got to call within the next 20 minutes. It's gonna be a huge blow, isn't it, for them?
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, let's be honest, if they get rid of those three players, they're irreplaceable at this stage of the season. Yes, you know, talented youth, Australian youth will come up. They'll probably buy overseas, some cheap overseas players who will fill the gaps next season. But it's another medal that they're probably going to lose this year. And, I mean, how long can the Mariners fans take that? How long are they going to be happy with just seeing their players develop in overseas leagues and doing them proud from a board when their trophy cabinet is empty?
How is Arnie coping with the pressure? Paddy's sworn at the officials. Yeah, it's all going downhill for him.
No one seems to know what he actually said, but I think he needs to go on to Oprah.
Yeah.
And just spill the beans. It seems to be the new fad at the moment.
next week, Arnie will be jumping up and down on Oprah's couch, swearing. Christian, you and I watched the game in the pub before we went and watched the Newcastle Jets play Brisbane Roar. So we didn't see the offence, but he's copped a one-game ban for the F3 Derby this weekend. Do you think that'll affect them now? Now they've got no players and no coach. How are they going to fill their bench?
Well, I've heard they've got some really good physios, so they might win the physio race to the halfway line for the injured players.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But now, of course, it could bring in a lot of cash for them, because now that they've got no players to sit on the Bunnings chairs, I presume they'll probably be selling those as well. So this could be an extremely big revenue raiser for the Central Coast Mariners.
And the beauty of this is that, of course, because they've got such a low crowd, no matter what happens to the players and the performances and the results on the field, the actual crowd number is not going to be impacted at all.
But also, on the flip side, if three of their players leave, the crowd drops by 15%. So that is a blow. Let's talk about our excursion to Newcastle. Christian, Pat, to fill you in, mate. Christian and I, on the weekend, became one of those types who are too busy eating their prawn sandwiches at the bar during halftime and actually missed the start of the second half.
Pretty much just went there for the free food.
Mate, without a doubt.
For the free grog.
Yeah. I used to hate, especially you watch games at like Wembley, where the corporates take like 10 minutes to get back after the second half, and you think, oh, that's just disgraceful. Don't take up someone's seat if you're not going to watch the football. And this was Christian and I standing there talking to former Perth Glory coach Dave Mitchell on the weekend as we heard a cheer and turned around and said that the Newcastle Jets had taken the lead. about 2 minutes later, they scored again, but it turned out to be offside, thankfully. So we only missed one goal, and then we decided it was probably best to get out and watch the second half of the game. So apologies to football fans all over the country, but we'll smuggle you in next time, mate. We'll
get you in. That's good. I'm pretty short, so you'd be able to get me in a bag or something.
Just
smuggle me in.
Well, just say that you've come as part of the... we'll get you to a Brisbane Roar game and say you've come on exchange.
Just say I'm a marquee player.
Yes, that's right.
From Asia.
Yeah, you're the exchange for Eric Partaloo. Christian, we noticed during that game that you said Eric Partaloo's sort of not been at the races, and we both sort of said at the same time, yeah, I think his mind is elsewhere. That's been confirmed today. How big a blow is that for the Roar?
Well, if you had have asked me last year, I would have said it would have been a huge blow. But, I mean, as we observed, and as I think a lot of fans have observed, he's almost been a bit of a passenger this year. And for him to actually finally have got the contract, he's able to leave, suddenly the coaches are under no pressure to play him. I think it actually might be a boost to the team.
Well, we noticed that as soon as we saw Massman Docker warming up, we thought, right, this could be where Brisbane get back into the game. And they did that. They were sort of better in the last 20 minutes of the game than they were for the whole game before then.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the first probably 10, 15 minutes was all Brisbane, with Newcastle playing, you know, quite direct long balls trying to unsettle Brisbane. But after that, I mean, you don't have to be the most one-eyed Brisbane supporter to say that the Jets weren't the better side for the majority of the match. And like you said, when the Docker came back on, and you noted it, you said this will be the change, Brisbane will come back here, and they did. You know, they started dominating the possession again, especially dominating the field position in their final third, and they had a few chances, and they probably should have scored a couple of goals to take the win.
What do you think's happened to Brisbane in 1 year,
Ange?
Yeah, it has to be Ange. I mean, that's the common factor.
You know,
Ange has left. Vidicic has taken over. He obviously changed the formation slightly, but it was enough to disrupt the team. And my thing is, assistant coaches can make good head coaches, but at a different club. If you're an assistant coach for a year, 2 years, 5 years at one club, there's just a bit of respect you lose because of that. You don't have the full respect of the head coach. And so that when you go into that head coach position, that same level of respect will stay for you. You cannot breach that last 10, 15, 20% of respect that you need, and therefore it's not going to work for you. But if you go to a different club, suddenly you're a clean slate, you are the head coach from the start. You can be a success, but I'm of the belief that if you're an assistant coach, you have to go to a different club to take over.
You have, however, put your full backing behind Mike Mulvey, a man that you've worked closely with the Melbourne Victory women's side.
Yes, so obviously I work with Melbourne Victory women, and Mike was the head coach for the majority of the W League season this year, and I've seen firsthand what a lot of people have told me in the past, and that is that his training methods are top-notch. The passion he brings out in players is amazing. The commitment he gets out of players is amazing, and they will die for him. And tactically, he's very good. He's not a dinosaur. He doesn't stick to one thing and say that's it, like some coaches do. He adjusts his formation for the team he has with him, the players he has, because there's no use, you know, going to the races if you've got a donkey, you know. So he adjusts what he needs to do to play the opposition he has and have the team he has. And I think it shows. From back in the day when he had the QAS women's program, and we're talking years ago here, from that stage on, he has won at something with every team he's been with, except the Gold Coast United A-League, and he was only with them for 6 games, so that hardly counts. I mean,
I think they were bottom of the league when he took over there as well.
That's right. So he's a very successful coach. He's great in everything he does. But his man management with both players, and more importantly, or just as importantly, staff members, admin staff, is top-notch, and that's what will get him up to the top. And you know what? Brisbane will come out a better side for this, especially next year when he has a full off-season to work with them.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. One thing that that has just reminded me of when you mentioned Gold Coast was your story that you told me on the weekend about your favourite Miron Blyberg story. Now, Miron is always good for a quote, and I think when Christian said... you know, my favourite Miron story, I said, was it this one? And he said, no, that was good, but it was better. And I said, oh, wait, you mean this one? And he said, no. And then he proceeded to tell me a story. I'll get you to tell the listeners and Pat, again, mate, briefly, your best Miron Blyberg story.
Now, some people may be aware, some of us probably won't be. I was used to attend the Gold Coast United home matches during the 2010-2011 season on the media pass that the FFA so kindly gave us. Well, part of that, of course, was pre and post-match, you'd go to the press conference and you'd have the home team would have their press conference followed by the away team. You know, roughly about 15 minutes after kickoff. Sorry, full time. Now, this one match...
Yeah, it would be odd if they did it 15 minutes after kickoff. It would be strange if they just decided to postpone the game for a while to get the coach's thoughts and a few quotes. Sorry, I'll let you continue.
Now, funnily enough, I'm pretty sure this is the game which was cancelled due to rain, the Central Coast Mariners versus Gold Coast match. So, therefore, you know, this press conference may actually have been 15 minutes
after kickoff. Yeah, it probably was, actually, yeah.
But anyway, so... what happens is Miron comes in with his player, Michael Thwaite, and they're sort of...
I'm sorry, Christian, I'll just stop you there. Michael Thwaite is now referred to as Shania Thwaite on this podcast.
Wonderboy.
Of course.
Yeah.
So Shania came in and closely followed by Miron. And they proceed to answer questions, stock standard stuff, you know, what's going to happen, you know, is the game going to be replayed, does this ruin your season, etc., etc., etc. And then just before I left, Miron sort of said something. He said, oh, I was talking to Graham Arnold just outside before I came to the presser, and he said that he was really glad that the game got called off because he thought, you know, we were in such good form that we were actually going to roll them. And everyone was a bit shocked. They went, wow, okay, that's interesting. That's big words from Graham Arnold. He's normally quite reserved, you know, especially when it comes to something which he knows will go out in public. Miron went out and Graham Arnold and Alex Wilkinson come in. So we're talking to Graham Arnold, and then one of the main journos linked into the previous question. He said, so Graham, we hear that you were relieved that the game ended early because you thought Gold Coast were looking dangerous and were probably going to beat you. And Graham's eyes just sort of lit up and just went, what earth are you talking about? And then the journo went, well, Miron told us. And he went, Miron? You're listening to something Miron told you? And then we just hear this... from the back of the room, and we turn around and Miron's like, ha ha, I got you all good.
It's always nice to know that one of the coaches in your country's premier competition has nothing better to do with his time than to set people up for practical jokes.
It's probably one of the
best part is,
yeah, instead of training each day, Miron was just working on his jokes, doing his comedy routine. Just the usual sort of stuff people would go to put their boots on, and he's glued them to the floor so they would fall over.
Oh, got you.
Well, the best thing is, when you think about it, what normally happens is that the coach would leave the press conference and go to his team to do, you know, the normal team talk, yes, the warm downs, etc., etc. But he said, screw the team, and he walks around and he hides behind the door in the hope that we're going to mention it.
Yes, a dangerously insane individual. mate, we'll leave the Mariners there, and Arnie and Gold Coast for that matter, and we'll move on to Sydney FC. Really, really shit for 80 minutes. Slightly less shit for the last 10 minutes. Managed to win the game. What does this say about Melbourne Heart?
It tells us that they're in a lot of trouble, doesn't it? I think we can all pretty much say that Sydney FC have not had the most glamorous of seasons. In fact, they've been quite terrible. And like you said, they had 80 minutes of absolute crock and 10 minutes of slightly less crock, and that was enough for them to get over Melbourne Heart. So, you know, all the Melbourne Heart fans out there, and I know there's a lot of them, they're going to be worried because John Aloisi just hasn't stepped up to the plate at the moment. And, you know, it's a normal situation. What Melbourne Heart do, they come out of the blocks in the first 20 minutes and they'll just play really well. You know, they're lucky, they might even get a lead, 2 goals, 3 goals, it doesn't matter. But then what it is as soon as it hits that 20-minute mark, it's a case of, was our first 20 minutes good enough so we can hold on to our last 70 minutes of absolute crap? And generally the answer is no.
A few talking points out of that game, a little bit of biff. There was, of course, Alessandro Del Piero and Ali Abbas squaring up to each other, a little bit of controversy there. Alessandro Del Piero also had a bit of a square up with Matt Thompson, a little bit of shirt pulling, and all I could think was, where's Warnie? Oh, I needed Warnie running in
it's
with his...
Melbourne team.
Yeah, F you, mate. F you, mate. That's what we need. Maybe we need to mic up Alessandro Del Piero. Is that what's going to bring the crowds in?
Oh, I think so. But then again, I mean, if you read the crossbar in today on the football today, one of the dislikes is that there's to give Alessandro Del Piero whinging too much. So if we mic him up, we might even drive even more people out. And suddenly, you know, Scott Condon might just stop watching.
Yeah, he is. That's something. He does whinge a lot, and he does walk a lot. He does do a lot of stuff in slow motion.
Yeah, Del Piero cam wasn't very good.
Yeah, Del Piero cam was like watching the Bathurst 1000 while the safety car's out. It was, you could sort of see, you could see what they were trying to do, but you wish they'd just get on with it a little bit.
But the commentators still love him.
Oh, everything, I still love him.
Everything he does, they absolutely applaud.
Yeah, I used to think that if you took a corner and it didn't beat the first man, it was a pretty shit corner. But whenever Alessandro does it, apparently, he's whipped that ball in at the near post, then it's taken a good clearance to get it away. Sydney FC, what do you reckon? Is there anything in this season for them? Is that a one-off result, or have they got anything? Can they get anything out of the season?
I think no. I think they need to really set their sights to next year and really try to develop a squad that's going to be competitive.
I mean, Joel Griffiths will come into the squad this week. I've said from the start, I think Sydney FC's problem is they've just pinned their hopes on Del Piero and thought, oh, he can play with 10 really crap players around him and still win.
Well, it did work for the first few weeks, but then the honeymoon period ended and it's really starting to slow down a little bit for him.
That's right. And with Alessandro, you didn't think it could get any slower. But it appears to. They're really in first gear.
Yeah.
And if they slow down any more, they will go into reverse. I personally don't think there's any hope. I think that result was a one-off. I think Farina has to work miracles to get them out of the situation that they're in. Christian, quick thought from you before we leave Sydney FC.
Well, it's going to be interesting because obviously we're saying they should almost shut up shop on this season and concentrate on next season. But in Frank Ferrandi's shoes, he's on an interim contract, ends this year. He can't afford to shut up shop. He can't afford to blood youngsters and develop for next year because he needs results this year to prove that he should have the job next year. And again, the ironic thing that is, if he doesn't blood youth and he does go for results, then next year when he ships out all the old guard, he's not going to have any youth with experience, and so next year might just be as much of a disaster. So,
exactly.
You know what, Frankie? Enjoy the job, mate.
Well, you sort of stole my thunder there. I was sort of saying that they can't win either. He builds for the future, like you say, and possibly sacrifices his own job, or much more understandably from a personal point of view, he fights to keep his job by playing experienced players, which is going to mean that they're going to get nowhere next season. So interesting times ahead for Sydney FC. Let's talk about the other team in Sydney, the good team in Sydney. They've won again away in Wellington. They are on fire, much like a lot of New South Wales at the moment.
That's worse than some of Michael's.
Yeah, sorry, I'm sorry, the heat stroke got to me again. Summer football. I say it's raining here today, actually. Which is...
It was raining yesterday.
It's overcast today. It's a nice change. Summer of football...
It's nice to be able to do a podcast without sweating.
Yeah, my sweat is a lot less than it was last week, which is...
Or last podcast.
Yeah, well, that's right. We've had a mid-season break.
Yeah, we have, actually.
We should discuss that. What did you do in your mid-season break?
I drank.
Yeah.
I bought new jeans. I got presents. I had my birthday.
That's right. Because you're a Boxing Day birthday, aren't you?
Yeah, so it's been good.
You have 364 days of just nothing. Well, 363 days of nothing each year.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then it's all cash at one time.
Yeah, it's all fun and games right at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
Festive season, what did you do?
Yeah, Christmas. Yeah.
Play golf.
A lot of golf. Yeah. You and I spent a bit of time out there. Well, I'm glad we covered that. Christian, we'll touch on you, mate. What'd you do over the festive period?
Oh, yeah, I had a bit of a trip.
Thanks for that, mate.
I'm being serious. What's the next topic?
Yeah, we'll move on. We'll leave it there. Sorry, we'll get back to Western Sydney Wanderers against Wellington Phoenix. Few people are calling them title contenders. Pat, your thoughts. Are they title contenders?
Yes.
Christian, your thoughts. Are they title contenders?
Absolutely.
Oh, right. Two yeses. I didn't think you'd both go for it. I don't think they are. I think that when push comes to shove, they might get beaten. But the thing is, they've shown they can beat anyone on their day. So it will be very interesting. Topol Stanley getting a goal, and so did Labano Haliti to get the win. How much trouble are Wellington in? Is it them and Sydney now fighting out for the spoon?
I think so. I don't really want to say it because earlier this year I wrote an article how Wellington might not win the title. I just got slated by Wellington fans for being so absolutely Australia biased. But look, they are not playing well. they do not have the star power to drag them out of that mess. And though it is hard to see them get the wooden spoon, because every year Ricky Herbert just seems to pull something out of nowhere and they seem to avoid it, and they even get close to making finals. So I think it is between Sydney and Wellington, but my sort of past history seems to suggest that Sydney might be the ones collecting it.
I have to say sorry to all the Wellington fans, because I picked them as a smoky at the start of the season.
Oh, you did? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now they've gone to water.
That was a great kiss of death. Yeah,
it was.
Who did you pick with them? Well, who was your tip? If they were your smoky...
I think it was Perth Glory.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, okay, and the kiss of death as well.
Yeah, that's right. Cancerous tips of Pat Flaherty.
Well, I think we called Adelaide boring at the start.
Yes, we did. We said they were very hard to get excited about.
Yeah, they're pretty much
they scored another three goals for the weekend. We'll talk about that. Adelaide 3, Perth 2. A five-goal thriller, but I'm sorry. Adelaide, every week I see them on the TV guide, I think... Yeah, I could take it or leave it if I watch that one. And then I find out they've scored three, created 78 chances, conceded a couple.
And play good-looking football.
Yeah, they're good value this season, aren't they, mate?
Yeah, I myself didn't actually get to see the match, but they do keep delivering. I thought that once they got over their sort of ACL pre-season advantage, which they had over the other teams, they'd start to drop off. And I thought we were seeing that a few weeks ago. They had the loss to Western Sydney and to Brisbane, and their form was starting to dip. But... I mean, a win like this, they're back on the up, they're back on a roll, and as much as it's disappointing to see on a personal perspective, because I predicted them to drop down. I think they might prove me wrong, and I might have to eventually say that they are title contenders, though I will give it another couple of weeks first.
Yeah, nobody wants to commit to saying, yeah, all right, I accept they might be there at the end of the season. It's funny.
Well, the thing about them is they've got so much creativity in that midfield, and it's just a joy to watch when they're on fire.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's so many outlets. Yeah. There's no one playmaker. Yeah,
like, you don't really see that in any other team.
Do you want to add to that, Christian? That's a good tactical point from Pat. They don't come around very often.
This is interesting. I want to see how far Pat can go with this. This might have been a stab in the dark. I needed to back it up with some facts.
I've got no facts.
No, he knows they score a lot of goals. He assumes that's because they create a lot of chances.
It's hard to find a more creative midfield in the A-League than Adelaide. Now, I mean, they have the players to do it, and Cosmina has proved a lot of doubters wrong, including myself, and he seems to be getting them to gel quite well. And, I mean, look, when you got someone like Geronimo, who was actually staying on the bench to come on, and how dangerous is that? That shows you what sort of level Adelaide are currently at, and what their belief is at if they think they can win without him, you know, regardless that he actually ended up coming on because of an injury, but... I guess that's a bit irrelevant. There probably isn't as a creative midfield in the A-League which could stand up to them and say, yeah, we're equal.
Brilliant. All right, well, we'll leave it there. I'm sort of thinking we could probably wrap up the show soon. Is there anything else that we should be covering?
I think so. There is a little matter of what the hell are the squadron doing at Newcastle Jets?
Oh, yes.
On his side of the pitch. What?
Yes. We were talking about this the other night. See, this is why... yeah, okay, I didn't plan this, but we'll go with it.
Yeah.
Christian and I sitting there on... what night were we at the game, Christian? Saturday?
Saturday night.
We were sitting there Saturday night, and we looked across at the squadron, the Jets fan base who sit in the corner. Yeah. And Christian made the point of, why are the squadron the only fan base in the league to not choose to sit behind the goal? The only one I could sort of think of is Wellington's fans kind of sit in the corner, but I think it's more to do with soaking up as much sunlight as you possibly can in New Zealand before the sun goes down. If there are any Jets fans listening to the show who can take time out to tweet us at the Football Sack and tell us why the squadron sits in the corner, because they're shit seats. If you've ever sat in that equivalent sort of area for a football game...
That might be cheap.
Well, that's obviously the reason. But I can't imagine that they'd be any cheaper than behind the goal.
Yeah, no, not at all. Like, we're not slating the Jets fans here. We're actually quite legitimately curious.
No, they're great fans.
Cool. That sounds really kind of different. But I mean, the only difference I can think is that they have grass behind the goals, but even that wouldn't make a difference because you're trying to stand anyway, aren't you?
Yeah, they spent most of the game hugging and jumping, so I can't imagine why. I think a hill would make that better.
Are you allowed to have alcohol in the hill?
Ah, see, that's a good shot. I think so, because I think the family hill's the other end. There's alcohol out on the hill, isn't there, Christian? I don't know.
I'm quite sure there is.
Yeah, okay, he's quite... Yeah, that's right, because those Ruben Zadkovic guys gave Ruben Zadkovic a beer that time.
Yeah, you
did too. After the game. So, yeah, please, if you are from the squadron or you just happen to know why they sit there, tweet us at the show here. Because
Wait, one thing I have to ask is, how was Emil Heskey? You met him?
Yeah, we did. We met Emil.
You met him?
Yeah, Christian did as well. A very brief one. He had to get out of there pretty quick. But, yeah, he was... I'm bigger than him.
You are?
Yeah, legitimately. I'm taller than him.
I was thinking I had other thoughts in my...
Yeah, no, I saw him at the urinal. And Christian and I stood there comparing. But no, there is a photo floating around somewhere that has Christian and I. No, that's... That joke's finished.
I'm still carrying on.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm naked, right? There's a photo floating around of Christian and I with Emil, and Emil is sort of about Christian's height, and I'm taller than him, which I was surprised about. You see him, you know, throw defenders to the ground, and you just assume that he is a man mountain. But no, very lovely guy.
Although, I still have one more question, is I just really couldn't understand. As nice as Emil was, I mean, he's at a club which allows a child to walk on the pitch and start signing autographs randomly.
Yes, this was another story. After the game finishes, the crowd sort of leaves. Christian and I stay to take advantage. We're not leaving until that bar closes, right? So we're standing there and we're looking outside, and we see the last of the dregs of the crowd down on the fence, getting autographs off whoever they can. And Christian goes, why are those people down there getting an autograph off a kid? There's a kid down there signing autographs. He's wearing a bib. And I said, oh, he must be one of the ball boys, and they must be those kind of idiots that, you know, they go to a sporting event and they'll just get anyone who's on the other side of the fence to sign their thing because they think it's worth something. And then Christian goes, oh, that's ridiculous. And then a few of the kids who are getting stuff signed walk away, and we see that it was actually Craig Goodwin. So apologies, Craig. If you listen to the show, you look 10, apparently. Oh, I think that's enough for today, is it not? Can you think of anything, Pat, that we haven't covered that you'd like covered?
No.
No. We'll be back next week when another week of the transfer window has passed and Central Coast Mariners have no players left. Christian, all the best for the rest of the week. Are you going to Perth this weekend, mate?
Of course I am.
Of course you are. Christian is going to Perth with the women's victory team. And, of course, the men's victory team play over there. So you'll most likely go to that game as well. Yes? No?
Yeah, it'll be the doubleheader. So the nice A-League on Saturday night, and they'll be at the W-League semi-final on Sunday.
Why? Do you reckon that they could have moved the women's game to NIB Stadium, whatever it's called now, as a curtain raiser? Or is it too late to do that?
Well, it's at NIB Stadium the next day. But the problem is because A-League is broadcast by Fox Sports and W-League is broadcast by ABC.
That's right.
So they can't do double headers because the two crews have a punch on and that just doesn't happen. So
that's right. It's well known that it's not because they have to get different cameras in there. It's because ABC and Fox Sports hate each other. All right. Well, this is the fourth time I'm going to attempt to wrap up the show. Thanks for being with us, Christian. It's a pleasure to have you back, mate. We might have to make this regular thing.
Absolutely love it. Thanks, boys.
Cool.
Cheers, mate.
Pat, thank you very much for taking part this evening.
Thank you, mate. Eat my KFC now.
That's right. I've stopped you from eating KFC.
It's 7:45, and I really want to eat my KFC.
That's right. So, KFC, if you listen to the podcast, we are open to sponsorship. So
maybe design a box for us.
Yeah, the summer heat box. Maybe something to do with a lot of spice.
Yeah.
And we can eat it while we sit here sweltering and doing the podcast.
Yes, I think that's a very good idea.
All right, cool.
Let's tweet them.
I'll tweet KFC. I'll tweet the Colonel. We'll tweet the Madden boys. They seem to know. they're driving around handing out KFC. We're going to drive by the studio, which is my house. Thanks so very much for listening, everybody. Enjoy your A-League action, and we will be back next week on the Football Sack Podcast. Bye for now.
That was the Football Sack Podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes to stay up to date with all of the football action across Australia.